feel fine today. I'm walking on cloud nine today. I'm over that line today. Happiness is finally mine today. I guess I'm just a lucky guy. And I'm prepared to tell you why.
Okay, that is a song I don't get the connection to, but what we're talking about today is holiday cooking. It's every year. It sort of kicks off the holidays for us on All Sides. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher, joining us today to talk about making your holiday meals amazing. WOSU Chefs in the City blogger, restaurant reviewer, and cooking teacher Steve Stover. Welcome, Steve.
Good morning, Ann.
And joining us by phone is New York Times food editor Sam Sifton. Welcome back, Sam.
Oh, nice to be here.
Sam, when do you start preparing for the holidays, and what do you recommend everybody else do?
Well, I'm a little different from your average bear because I got to prepare for the holidays for the readers of the New York Times and NYT Cooking. So, amazingly, we start thinking about the holiday in late summer. As for me personally, as an American, I'm going to start on Wednesday night like most of us.
Well, Wednesday night. Well, nowadays, you know, there's actually stores. I mean, Whole Foods is open on Thanksgiving until, I think, the afternoon. So
I think that's a drag, I have to say.
I agree.
I really think, you know, this is really the most American holiday, much more so in some ways than the 4th of July. And it would really be great if we could remove commerce from it entirely. We can get our stuff together on a Wednesday evening and give these workers the day off like the rest of us.
We even have the Amazonization of Thanksgiving, where you can get Thanksgiving in a box from one of our best restaurants. Amazing.
Delivered by drone.
Yes. Happy Thanksgiving, Sam.
I don't know what that does to all the aromas in the house that should be there when you're cooking. It's 4 days to go. For those who do like to work ahead, let's talk about what you can get done now. I mean, I'm always the cranberry sauce kind of a person on a Monday or Tuesday. Sam Sifton?
I think that's right. Cranberry sauce is something you can do ahead. I was kidding about that Wednesday night. I made some stock last night to get that going. There are a lot of people who have their pie doughs made and maybe frozen, and they can start to defrost them. You can start in the next couple of days making any casseroles that you'd like to reheat on the day. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to get done in advance.
And the famous make ahead mashed potatoes on several fronts with the cream cheese and extra butter, and that's one of my favorites to make ahead.
Yum.
And you can make the dough for the bread and rolls, and I think your idea of starting your stock early is a good one as well.
I think I really have to say that having a lot of stock on hand from the very beginning of the day on Thanksgiving is really, really helpful for all kinds of stuff, not just for refreshing the dressing that you're heating in the oven or for making the gravy. But, you know, if you slice that turkey after it's been resting for a half an hour and put it on a warm platter and then hit it with a half a cup of hot stock before sending it out to the table, cheat of the first order.
Which we want to know more about.
But emphasizing the 30-minute rest, because some people don't do that. And I think that's one of the most important tips of the day.
Absolutely. Let that bird regenerate.
Gather its juices.
It allows its brine juices to sift back into the flesh.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's our annual holiday cooking show. With me here in the studio, Steve Stover, WOSU Chefs in the City blogger and a cooking teacher here in Columbus. Also with us, Sam Sifton, New York Times food editor. Do you have a question or comment about preparing your meal for this holiday or any of the holidays coming up through the season? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Sam Sifton, talk about how you make your stock.
Oh, okay. So what I like to do is I did this yesterday. I'll tell you about it in real time.
Okay.
I went to the market to pick up a lot of dry goods that I needed for the holiday, and I saw on the top shelf to the left of the sad supermarket turkeys, I saw a big packet of turkey necks and another of turkey wings. And I bought those. I took them home. I salted them up. and I put them in a roasting pan with a little duck fat that I happen to have. That's fancy. I'm talking like New York fancy. But you could do it with butter. You could do it with oil. You could do it with
schmaltz.
Bacon drippings or schmaltz if you had anything, some oil. And then I roasted them, and I got them super, super, got a lot of color on them. They rendered a bunch of fat. And then I put them in a pot with some onion and carrot, and I had a leek and something else. Yeah, a couple bay leaves and some peppercorns, and I just burbled that along all evening long into the night. And I strained it off this morning, and it was beautiful colored, like a very almost honeyish color. And I put that in the freezer, and it's going to be awesome in the morning.
Wow.
On Thanksgiving Day.
And that duck fat, you still have a little left for your duck fat potatoes. Wasn't that one of Melissa's recipes this year, too?
It was. Melissa Clark has a marvelous recipe for duck fat potatoes. And I have to say, the duck fat that I have is left over from the duck confit I made months ago, and it keeps in the fridge forever and ever. It's a perfect medium. It's got a high smoke point, lots of great flavor, and it's bananas good on potatoes.
I think about the renderings I've done of duck and goose now and think, why didn't I save that?
Oh my gosh,
killing
a goose
me.
is like 75% fat.
It's ridiculous.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's what you're doing when you cook a goose. You're rendering a goose.
But for those who don't do the duck confit, you can buy duck fat at Whole Foods, for example.
Okay,
and then that makes the fabulous duck fat potatoes where you put them in boiling water for salted water. With a little bit of baking soda for 1 or 2 minutes, drain them, and then go on with your life. And that's what makes them so nice. And you also put them on a hot sheet pan.
Yeah, and boy, I'm telling you, that baking soda with the water in there, it makes them super crisp on the outside, and they're sort of meltingly tender on the inside. And oof,
okay.
We're not going to make it through the hour. I'm so
hungry
already.
Did anybody bring any food? Liana in Sunbury is going to introduce our next topic for us. Liana, you're on the air. Hi.
Oops. Hi. I was calling about brining. I read an article that Sam had written this last week that brining is kind of falling out of favor with chefs. And he was talking about just salting the turkey a couple days before. And I wondered if I still want to brine it, how long do I take it out of that solution and let it set in the refrigerator before actually roasting it?
Okay,
whether
so
I've been doing it right.
Okay, yeah. So you want it both ways, which is terrific. You want to brine, but you also want to kind of air dry it and allow that skin to get crisp, and that's cool. I think that I hope you're brining already so that you can pull that bird on Tuesday evening and let it sit from Tuesday evening through Thursday morning naked in the refrigerator so that skin gets the best chance to dry. I wouldn't salt the skin having brined it in a solution. I would just let it air dry, pat it very dry with paper towels, get it into the fridge and let that cold air do its drying trick so that you've got the best chance at a crisp exterior. That's the whole reason you want the bird dry, is so that the hot oven doesn't have to do the work of evaporating water on the skin. It can go immediately to the business of rendering the fat and creating essentially like a blister around this brined and delicious meat within.
Now, Kim Severson of the New York Times wrote about the rise and fall of turkey brining. What's the controversy, Sam Sifton?
Well, so the controversy is that, we in the food media elite with our fake food news every year have to come up with something new to say about Thanksgiving. And about 25 years ago, someone talked to, it was actually Alice Waters was the progenitor of brining in our newspaper, and the great R.W. Apple Jr., Johnny Apple, to those of us who knew and edited him, was out in the Bay Area and had this delicious brined bird at the home of Alice Waters, and wrote about it. And others wrote about brining as well as this way of bringing moisture into the bird, and flavor too. And it became quite fashionable in some circles to do it. Now, here's the thing. It takes a lot of time. I said that I'm going to start my preparation on Wednesday night. That makes me an average American, I suppose. So the notion that I would secure the bird and then begin the brining process on the weekend before is, you know, that was tough for some. And space was a problem as well, because to submerge a 22-pound turkey in a solution of salt and sugar and maybe a few aromatics requires quite a lot of space. At the very least, you need a cooler, and to the cooler you must add ice, and when you add the ice it affects the salinity of the brine, and is that working, and can I have it outside, and what if a raccoon gets, you know, it just then all of a sudden you had us following the teachings of another chef, Judy Rogers, who just salted the exterior of a chicken. She didn't do it for turkeys until later, and allowed that salt to penetrate straight away into the bird and help it retain moisture, and that it did really effectively. So for those of us who didn't have a ton of time, the no brine method, or what's called the dry brine method, became the thing.
And Judy Rogers, the late famous chef from the Zuni Cafe in San Francisco, is really, that's sort of the thing, the new thing this year is the dry brining. It's not new, but it's certainly been the big change for this year. And you can do it. It's a shorter period of time. It's obviously more convenient. And we've been doing it now for about a year. We did dry brining our turkey last year, and it was terrific. And there's a comprehensive discussion in Melissa Clark's turkey, the whole how to cook a turkey in the New York Times, which tells you exactly how to do it. A half a
That's
teaspoon
right.
of salt per pound. Obviously, a little pepper. I might be closer to a teaspoon per pound. And then as long as you can do it. One question is, do you rinse it? I don't.
I don't. This is – well, yeah. This again, we look to these women who preceded us in the chairs that we sit in, and their pronouncements became, you know, law. Brine, dry brine, rinse the bird. Rinse the bird, you know, originally came from Julia Child, was the one who started with the washing of the chicken. And what's interesting is that kind of studies of what happens to pathogens in the kitchen when you do something like rinse the bird, they go everywhere. There's turkey juice all over the kitchen when that happens, and it is in fact much safer from the point of view of cross contamination to just dry the bird rather than to rinse it in advance of salting it. And yes, salting it, dry brining it is something you can find out about on nytcooking.com in that Melissa Clark How to Cook Turkey guide. And you know, hey, that's the flavor of the year. This year skirt lengths are up, next year they'll be down.
That's right. And to go a little further on Melissa's thing, it's a good guide. It has cooking times and tips. It reminds people to add some water or other liquid, cider, some aromatics to the pan so that the drippings don't burn. She says don't baste. Some other people might do that. And how to tell when the turkey's done, and the admonition to let it roast. And there's even a video on carving for the uninitiated.
Yep. the all-important video for carving. Liana in Sunbury, thanks for your call. We are going to continue our conversation about holiday cooking with, you just heard Steve Stover, WOSU Chefs in the City blogger and cooking teacher, and also with us by phone, Sam Sifton, New York Times food editor. Bring your questions. This is the time, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're just a few days away from the first of many holiday celebrations of the season every year. We bring together experts in the kitchen to offer advice on the perfect holiday feast. Still with us today, WSU Chefs in the City blogger, restaurant reviewer, and cooking teacher, Steve Stover. And by phone, New York Times food editor, Sam Sifton. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Two more issues, Sam Sifton, about the turkey. We did have someone call in. They couldn't stay on the phone, but they wanted to know how to get the turkey to cook evenly.
Ooh, the big challenge.
Right.
Well, the easiest way to cook the bird evenly is to not cook it in the traditional Norman Rockwell manner as a whole bird that looks like what we think of when we think of the turkey emoji. Mm-hmm. Instead, what you do is if you turn the bird over and then using a stout knife cut out its backbone, you can splay it out in a roasting pan so that it's got an enormous amount of surface area and is quite flat and even. And then if you roast that in the oven at the regular temperature that you would, let's say 350, 375, it will cook with a little liquid in the pan as well to prevent those drippings from burning. It'll cook faster than it does in its whole form, mm-hmm. and it'll cook quite a bit more evenly.
Spatchcock.
Yeah, well, you're using these words.
Technical.
Now. Yeah.
Yeah, now, the term is British, and it's called spatchcocking. And really what it means is just cutting out that backbone, which seems intimidating but really isn't.
No.
It's obvious what the backbone is in a turkey. It's nice and big. And once that's out, you can cook it flat, fast, and even.
And one other thing I've tried, with chicken at least, is to get the pan real hot and then put the dark meat down on a very, very hot pan. And, also, the other big trend this year, Sam, is the 450 to start down to 350 method of cooking the turkey. You want to talk about that?
Yes, I've been doing that for a couple of years now. I actually picked it up from deep frying birds. When I deep fried birds, I was so amazed at how quickly you got this when the bird was immersed in super hot oil, how quickly you got a crisp exterior skin that prevented juices from leaking out of the bird. And so I thought, well, I wonder if that'll work in the oven. And it does. Like hitting that bird at 450 tightens the skin. And then remember, it's dry. Dry skin.
Mm-hmm.
So it tightens up around everything, forming this, as I say, kind of a blister around the bird. And then you, after about a half hour or so, turn down to 350 and cook it nice and even until it's done. And boy, that's a juicy bird.
Mm. Let's see. Janet and Bexley, you're on the air. Hi, Janet.
Hey, Ann. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, I have a cautionary tale. I learned the hard way. If you add cold liquid to a hot pan to defrost it or add liquid to your bird, the thermal changes can actually create such a splashback that it'll break the window in your oven.
Oh.
Yeah,
so
Yeah.
Steam is super powerful, as the people who built the first steam locomotives will tell you. Yeah, you definitely don't want to introduce super cold into super hot.
Okay. Good note. I mean, particularly for the first timers out there, that's the kind of thing that can kind of ruin the day.
Could I throw in one more for the first timers? Get an instant read meat thermometer. You can get them at the hardware store for $10 or go to a cooking store and pay $30. But you can stick it in the bird and it instantly shows you the temperature and it greatly reduces your chances of overcooking a turkey. And remember that all things being equal, the breast is going to be done before the rest of the turkey. And I don't know how you feel about this, Sam, but sometimes I do take the legs off and finish those in the oven after I take out the breast and stuff.
That's absolutely fine. I don't have an issue with that at all. In fact, I'm trying to convince people that moving away from that whole bird aesthetic, which was given to us by Rockwell in the 40s with that famous painting, Freedom from Want, moving away from that is probably a good idea from the point of view of Thanksgiving cooking success. You're absolutely right, Steve. The best way to ensure Thanksgiving cooking success is to get that instant read thermometer and use it carefully at the thickest part of the thigh or in the breast to make sure you're at the temperatures that you want. And remember as well that the temperature of the bird is going to increase when it gets out of the oven and it rests for that half hour. So if you want to follow those FDA rules and you want to have the bird, you know, super cooked and you're taking it out at 165 or 170 or something like that, that's going to be a dry bird. Yeah. Remember, you're going to go up 5 to 7 degrees during that 30-minute rest.
And what about a lot of people still like to stuff the bird? I've now transitioned to dressing exclusively and love it all the more. And we can talk about the dressing, but can't that affect how the bird cooks as well?
It absolutely can. And it's but one reason why I caution against stuffing the turkey. It will increase the amount of cooking time required to cook the bird and will increase the likelihood that the breast meat will be dry. The second reason why I advocate for not stuffing the turkey is you can't get that much stuffing.
I agree. That's what
I like stuffing. I want a lot of it. So let's make it as dressing outside, and it'll be delicious. You're going to have a little leftover fat in the pan when you make your gravy. There's going to be an enormous amount in there. Some of that fat can go onto the dressing that you cooked in the oven to add flavor. And you can add a little bit of the stock as well that we talked about already. And it's going to be just as delicious, nay, more delicious than what would have happened if you'd stuffed that paltry little amount into
exactly,
the bird.
Exactly. There's not enough when you stuff. And I just made that up. Steve and I both now nestle some turkey wings. I put them on top. Steve kind of tucks them in and just get that fat from the turkey wings as it's baking in the oven.
Sure, I like that technique and endorse it heartily. There are enormous numbers of turkey parts that are being sold in your markets alongside the turkeys that you get, and you know, making use of them is a good idea.
That's the point. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's our annual holiday cooking show. You just heard from Sam Sifton, New York Times food editor, and also with us, Steve Stover, WSU Chefs in the City blogger and cooking teacher. Always with me on Chefs in the City. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org if you have a question or comment. And Chris in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Hi there, Ann. How's it going today?
Fine, thanks.
Hi. First, I want to say to Sam, I love your What's a Cook Each Week column. It's my favorite part of the Times.
Thank you so much for saying so.
It's the greatest. But my question is about my favorite part of Thanksgiving, the wine. What kind of wine will really hold up to all this really rich food? I know there's some traditional selections for poultry, but with all the other side items, what would be a good choice?
Do you know lots of wine? lots of wine is what's required.
Same with stuffing. Yeah, go ahead.
No, listen, it's really interesting. I've talked with Eric Asimov, the wine critic of the New York Times, a lot about this subject. What is the proper wine for the Thanksgiving meal? And he really does come down on this idea that what you should be drinking with your Thanksgiving meal is the wine you like to drink.
Mm-hmm.
And so for some, that could be like some big, powerful California Zinfandel. It was for me for years until I realized, like, I don't know if that actually is the wine that I like and should be drinking. For others, there were years when we were always drinking Beaujolais Nouveau at Thanksgiving because it was when the Nouveaus mm-hmm. showed up, and having a slightly chilled, super, you know, fruit forward wine like that was terrific with our fruit forward meal. But, you know, we did a Thanksgiving wine tasting this year at the Times, and I swear to you, this sounds like a joke, but a Turkish wine ended up winning out as the most drinkable, most quaffable wine. And I really do think it comes down to you ought to be drinking what you want to drink at the Thanksgiving feast. I've done well with orange wines at Thanksgiving. I've done well, as I say, with those big American Zins, and I've done well with those lighter French wines.
And Eric has had an article in the November 15th New York Times, which goes over a lot of choices. He likes the Chardonnay and mm-hmm. Pinot Noir, which is a little. And we usually have a little bottle of Nouveau Beaujolais to start, and then we're Cote de Rhone people, maybe a Gigondas or something like that.
That's a
blend, which is particularly food friendly and a little lighter than a Cabernet or a big Zinfandel. So there's another idea.
Chris, thanks for that call. Anybody else? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Email from Mike. He asks, is basting necessary? I see conflicting comments online about basting and then covering with foil near the end. I'm so confused.
Oh, I'm sorry for your confusion. I think that people who baste a lot often have to end up covering the thing at the end because, they're varying the degree of heat in the oven by opening it so often, and then they end up turning it up a little higher, and then it starts to burn the top of the bird. it goes on forever. Listen, you can baste and your turkey will be delicious. You cannot baste and your turkey will be delicious. It really comes down to the sort of tradition of cooking and how and why it is you're doing what you're doing. I have basted for 25 years, and I'm not going to stop now, although I've also, you know, cooked plenty of test turkeys where I didn't. It's part of my comforting kind of ritual of making the feast. I talked to a guy, I was doing some reporting on family traditions, and I talked to a guy who made his turkey the way his mother made it for years and years and felt that this was the best preparation ever. And it involved kind of cutting the bird apart and cooking it in a particular pattern. And I asked him to go and talk to his mom about why she did it, and it turned out she did it because that was the only thing that would fit in the pans that she had. So there was no science to it. It was just tradition. And basting can be part of your tradition or not. And if you're nervous about it and you're a first-timer, then don't baste. Just let the thing cook.
Yeah, we didn't call it a baster when I was a kid. We called it a turkey baster because that's the only time of the year that we ever used it. Let's talk about dressing. So we're going to do it outside the oven. We've been talking about, you know, nestling the whatever turkey pieces you can bring into it. But start out with the bread. Sam Sifton, a favorite, or what's a good go-to for people who don't know what kind of bread to go with?
Stale bread is a good go-to.
Okay.
If you don't know what to do. I mean, and that sounds facetious, but it's true. The fact of the matter is, you know, I make a cornbread dressing, and so I make cornbread for it, bespoke cornbread, and then I let it dry out, and I use that. But I've made delicious ones with stale baguettes. I've used country loaves and boules, and I've done it with multigrain breads and the like. The idea is that you have some bread substance, right, that is going to eventually absorb fats and liquids. either from the turkey that you're nestling in there or the turkey fat you're adding to it, or butter or the like, along with some stock.
Mm-hmm.
And the bread then becomes rehydrated with that fat and flavor, and it's just fantastic. You're gonna want some allium, some onion probably, right?
Mm-hmm.
Onion, bread, maybe some celery, maybe some fruits, nuts.
Sausage. You
know, sausage mm-hmm. is an awesome addition. to go from turf to surf, an oyster stuffing is really delicious. A chestnut stuffing is really delicious.
Are there any mixtures that go particularly well together? So if you're going to do an oyster stuffing, what are the aromatics that you put with that? How would that change?
Well, for me, I would probably do my bread would be closer to white or mm-hmm. a sourdough. Then I've got my oysters. My alliums might be leeks in that case,
okay.
or onion would be fine. Mm-hmm. And I might, for fat, get bacon in there, so that I'm kind of looking toward the classic New England chowders there, and then rendering them in bread form and that would work really well. Conversely, if you were doing a cornbread, you might look south to the kind of meat, if you want to have a meat in there, so maybe andouille sausage,
mm-hmm.
and then to match those, red bell peppers and that sort of holy trinity of peppers and garlic and celery.
Steve Stover.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sam Sifton. Steve confided to me, and now we're going to tell the whole world that they're thinking about foregoing dressing this year.
It's
oh my God, that's great! What are you going to do? Have a salad?
Yeah.
This is un-American. Talk.
Okay, I've been shamed.
I think I had shamed him sufficiently, but
we're
going to
be cooking under primitive conditions.
No,
in my daughter's place.
Oh my goodness! This is you are steps from veganism, sir.
Please, God, no.
Be forewarned. We will continue our conversation with Sam Sifton of the New York Times, where he is food editor, and also Steve Stover, WSU Chefs in the City blogger, and also a cookie teacher here in Columbus.
And big trouble.
Yeah. Okay. Liz, well, if you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Through the woods to grandmother's house we go. The horse knows the way to carry the sleigh through the white and drifting snow. Over the river and through the woods, oh, how the wind.
Welcome back to All Sides and our annual holiday cooking show. We're talking about the recipes that make a difference on the holidays. Still with us is WSU Chefs in the City blogger, restaurant reviewer, and cooking teacher Steve Stover. And with us by phone is New York Times food editor Sam Sifton. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I wanted to talk a little bit about, what do you do when you're a vegetarian? I don't know if vegan, I think let's just stick with vegetarian at this point. Just you kind of focus on your side dishes then, right, Sam Sifton?
I used to answer that by saying, yeah, focus on side dishes. But the fact of the matter is I'm kind of growing to like the idea of the vegetarian main course. Like, how do you really think about providing people with something that is delicious, meatless, has plenty of protein in it? What I started doing was stuffing whole squash, like making big, big things that could be a centerpiece of a meal and eaten with side dishes. So, for instance, I'll take delicata squash and kind of personal delicata squash, like the size of maybe you know, a cup of coffee, and cut the top off, scoop out those seeds in the middle, and then create. We were talking about dressing before, but create a kind of meatless stuffing for it with a lot of nuts and dried fruit in it, as well as bread and butter and alliums and the like, and then roast those off. And what you end up with is something that you could build a plate around. You know,
yeah.
You could have in this whole roasted stuffed delicata squash right in the middle, and then to the side there could be some sweet potatoes and some green beans and some Brussels sprouts and some cranberry sauce, and off you go to the races. And that's a delicious vegetarian feast. No turkey required. No tofurkey required.
Yeah, tofurkey. Mm. Huh. That's a nice idea. I like that. I like it anyways. I'm going to make it anyways. Let's see. Gabrielle in Delaware, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Ann. I just had two comments. The first was back to the stuffing issue, which is that my parents always made the stuffing with red wine, walnuts, and raisins, and it's just a really wonderful complement to a turkey with a kind of savory contrast.
Sounds
so that's
great.
An idea to throw out there. And then the other is to Sam Sifton. My dad has for years just, that's his favorite column in the New York Times, and he reads each one as like it's a novel, and he just went into the hospital with sepsis and crawled back from it, and one of the first things he wanted to do was to read the column, which he had some trouble doing, but it was definitely a high point of his life. So I just wanted to let you know.
Good news about your dad, Gabrielle.
I'm so glad to hear that your dad's getting better, and I'm so touched to hear that the column can bring him some happiness. That's what we're trying to do here. So thank you very much.
Really does.
Thanks a lot.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks. Same to you. Let's see. Amy in Worthington, you're on the air. Hi, Amy.
Hi. You sort of just answered my question. We're a vegan family, and there are so many options available, but as you just noted, most of them are these sort of tofurkey loaves that we've been doing for years, and they've gotten rather boring. I loved your delicata squash idea. Yeah. I didn't know if you had experimented with other options, vegan options.
Oh, for sure. You know, we are trying to do so. The great challenge for me at Thanksgiving with cooking the food veganly, if I can coin that phrase, is that of course I can't use butter. So, which leads me toward coconut oils and things of that nature, and it works pretty darn well. To sub out the coconut oil or for the butter in some of those. If you go to nytcooking.com and take a search for Thanksgiving plus vegan, you'll see a ton of good options that'll get you through the holiday well.
Great idea.
Amy, thanks a lot for that call. Amber in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Amber.
Hi, I was wondering if anyone had any tips on deboning and rolling a turkey?
Oh, yeah, I've got a really good tip. Ask your butcher to do it. I have for years and years messed around with turducken recipes, which of course is a deboned turkey that is stuffed with a deboned duck, which is stuffed with a deboned chicken. And I can tell you that it takes about as long to debone for me to debone those three animals as it does to cook the whole darn thing.
Mm-hmm.
Butchers are one of the sort of underrated heroes of the Thanksgiving feast. And we're in danger of losing butchers to the big box supermarket stores where the butchers are actually just processing food in a plant a long way from here.
Mm-hmm.
A butcher is a craftsman of the first order. And I think if you go into the butcher shop and you ask for a deboned turkey, that's going to make a butcher happy. He'd rather, or she would rather be creating kind of custom cuts for good customers like yourself than just sawing up pork chops for the supermarket case any day of the week. So it's not simply that I'm saying it's you know, it's easier or it's impossible to debone or whatever. It's not. It just takes a lot of time. And here's a professional who can do it beautifully, cheaply, quickly, and with pride in his heart or her heart. And I think that's the way to go.
Wonderful. Thank you.
When in Columbus, Park Street, Poultry and Game at the North Market, they always have those little they have spatchcock chickens, and they have chicken roasts that have been deboned, and they will be happy to do it. I think all of their products are local Ohio organic poultry and game, and so that would be a good source. But call ahead. They also mm-hmm. have turkey and chicken stock, excellent quality for about $6 a quart.
Okay. Karen in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Karen.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking the call. Sure. Thanks for being there. I have a question regarding make-ahead sweet potatoes. We're not going to have a lot of space in the oven, so I'd like to make them mostly ahead and preferably not mashed because someone else is bringing roasted butternut squash.
Oh, my goodness. So this is I was just thinking about this morning. And I actually came down on the mashed, but now that I can't because somebody else is bringing butternut squash, I'll go in a slightly different direction. I think you could roast on Wednesday night, I think that you could roast your sweet potatoes, not all the way, but until they're just getting soft. And then you could cut them into lengthwise into quarters and have them on a sheet pan or nestled into a casserole. And then the next day you could reheat them in the oven. It would be pretty shallow, so you might be able to get it in there under the turkey in the oven. And for me, I think I'm going to make a kind of a glaze of maple and butter and a little chipotles on adobo hot smoked jalapeno and get that on there as a glaze that'll sweeten them up and fire them up. And then I might hit them with some dried nuts and a little bit of like a yogurt sauce, like a crema. That could go over as a kind of cooling agent on top. And that I could make all the components of that on Wednesday night, or you could, and then heat those guys up the next day with the glaze and finish with the nuts and the yogurt topping, and you'd be off to the races.
Oh, man, that sounds good. Mm. You had me at Chipotle for sure. I love the Chipotle it's not roasted sweet potatoes, but it's scalloped. It's like a Chipotle scallop potato. Yeah, it just adding a little fire like that. But now you got me on the kind of like a sour cream or crema or yogurt, something like that on top.
You're always triangulating, right?
If
you've got sweet,
exactly.
You want salty, you want fiery, you want acidic,
cooling.
You're just working these different angles against each other.
Yeah. Karen, thanks a lot. Good luck with that. We still have time for calls, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's do some takes on the green bean casserole. We all know how to follow the recipe on the dried onion can, but how do you like to do a twist on that, Sam Sifton?
Well, for my green beans, I just like to, you know, I like to toss them. There's a methodology in Chinese cuisine which they call dry sauté, and I kind of like doing that. It's just essentially like rather than sautéing, I'll roast green beans in the oven, and with a little bit of shallot in some oil, and that's it.
Wow.
Little salt on top of that. Maybe I'll deglaze the pan with a shot of white wine, but probably not.
We virtually only roast vegetables, asparagus, peppers, anything. We do a roasted vegetable for ratatouille or caponata. We'll just roast the vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
It just caramelizes and brings the flavors together. And if you roast them, you can just take them off as they're done.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing more than one vegetable.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know what? I can't even believe this. We haven't even gotten to the desserts yet. What am I thinking? Steve Stover, what's up this year? You always have a twist.
Well, I'm not a big pumpkin pie guy. We've done a freeform apple galette this year. We're doing a Derby Town pie, which is maybe heresy for the pumpkin pie eaters, but it's a pecan pie with a little bit of chocolate in it. I'm doing in cooking classes. I did an apple pecan tart where I threw on sort of a brown sugar butter sauce in the freeform apple tart, and then sprinkled some pecans on at the end. Served with a little bit of creme fraiche. We make an old fashioned apple cake, and all of the above can be served with a little scoop of Grater's cinnamon ice cream every year at this time. Thank you very much,
Sam Sifton.
100% apple ombre pie. This is the breakout hit of our Thanksgiving season at NYT Cooking, and I'm really excited about it. It's a recipe that came to us from one of our developers, Aaron Jean McDowell, and essentially what it is sliced apples lined up vertically, and you get different colored apples and then have them go in that kind of ombre shading from one side to the other. And then you sprinkle it with sugar and cinnamon, and it is bananas. You stand them up.
Like the Hasselback potatoes.
Exactly. So imagine just row after row of Hasselback apples in shifting hues across the surface of the pie. It's both absolutely beautiful. The kids will put it all over their Instagrams. And it's phenomenally delicious. So apple ombre pie. That's our big hit at NYT Cooking this year.
I'm on it.
Man, that sounds wonderful. I am making an apple pie this year, but I also make a pumpkin and I don't do pecan, I do walnut pies instead.
Walnut?
Fair enough.
Yeah, it's not
crazy
quite
talk.
As...
I love it.
I think...
Midwest.
It's just not quite as rich as the pecan pie, and it's a whole different thing, but it's, you know, it's, everything else is the same. You just use walnuts instead of pecans.
Wow, and sounds cheaper, too.
Yes.
Those pecans are expensive. Mm.
Exactly. I mean, all of that stuff. I love a pumpkin pie. I still do, and I do the roasted pumpkin, and I kind of go crazy with the whole thing, you know, right from scratch.
A little chipotle in that, too.
No way. No.
Just saying.
No. Oh, we do have a few calls. Let's see. Susan and Galena, you're on the air. Hi, Susan.
Hello. How are you?
Good.
Good.
Go ahead.
Wanted to thank you for sharing. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to thank you for sharing some of the recipes. I wanted to share one that's been in my family for many years. My cousin used to make with sweet potatoes, and that's cubed sweet potatoes that are drizzled with orange juice, fresh oranges, and, you know, put some oranges in with it.
Citrus.
Do half.
Susan? Yeah, we lost you. Sorry about that. Why don't you send that in and post it on Facebook page for All Sides, and we'll get that recipe from Susan.
We've got a bunch of recipes up, too.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
We have 8 recipes up.
At the Chefs in the City.
Sticky toffee pudding. Yeah. And the aforementioned apple pecan tart, cranberry orange relish, the make-ahead mashed potatoes, rich mashed potatoes with lots and lots of butter, and roasted vegetables as well.
And we will, of course, have a link to New York Times food page so you can get caught up.
It's just really, yet. Sam, this is even the best
this is
of all.
I think this
year.
Is the best ever,
thank
Sam.
Thank you.
I mean, it's everything you need to know. And
planning, the menu planner,
yeah.
the entire section on pies.
Yeah, it's everything. It's fantastic. Sam Sifton, thank you so much for taking the time out of this very busy week to join us for this show.
It's a pleasure to be with you, and I wish you a happy Thanksgiving. And I tell all your listeners, it's going to be okay. It's going to work.
It'll work. That's Sam Sifton, New York Times food editor, and Steve Stover. Thank you.
To
you as well.
We're going to put a listing of restaurants that are open on Thanksgiving on the website or Facebook or wherever. I've got at least 10 good ones, and there are about 20 restaurants. But call ahead. Make your reservations
today.
Do that today.
That's it. Thank you for all your calls. Thank you for your questions. And thanks the most of all for your attention. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.